have it, so it's very slow.
I will call the conference committee to order, and I'd like to welcome everybody to this nice spring day.
Yes,
yes. The husband was asking me where I was if I was only working 60 days a year.
So why don't we start? We're going to have a lot of holds today. But if staff would start, want to go start through the side by Article 2. And by the way, there's an updated version of the Article 2 language on the website.
We have it.
Yeah, this is
public.
Is this
updated?
So you
don't wiggle
it around.
Yes. Yeah, the staff has the updated version.
They're going to go to staff.
Okay, so if council or staff would want to start through the.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 2, the Reform 2020 contingency article. As you had mentioned, we're going to be holding on most of the sections. A lot of the sections are identical with language, but the Senate and the House, there are differences with the funding, and therefore we're going to hold the two Reform 2020 areas that we are, or that looks like you will be adopting today, as if anybody has the governor's change pages. The first is the HCBS Critical Access Study and Service Development, which is page 29, and the Alternative Care and Essential Community Supports, FFP, which is Governor's Change, page 22. So, and I will, as we go through the sections, I'll be pointing out which ones are which. And
do you want us to approve the language, but we're going to not approve the final?
Mr. Chair, members, as I understood it, we were going to hold on the language, even if it was identical, but the funding was different.
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate Section 1 and House Section 1 are identical. Modifies the list of assessments used to determine the nursing facility level of care. And we'll hold on that. Senate Section 2, House Section 2 are identical. Requires the Department of Human Services to conduct a one-time critical access study due by August 15, 2015 on the local capacity and availability of home and community-based services for older adults and people with disabilities. Again, it's identical, and the funding is identical.
Senator Laurie moves that we adopt the Senate language for Article 2. Section 2, rather. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? So, Section 2 is adopted.
Mr. Chair, members, Senate Section 3, House Section 3 are identical. Specifies that cities, counties, and state agencies are not required to have licensed social workers assisting older adults and people with disabilities with long-term care counseling. We'll be holding on, so I believe. On the next page, top of page 3, Senate Section 4, House Section 4. There's some technical differences, and this adds to the list of specific powers of the Commissioner of Human Services, the designation of the Senior Linkage Line and Disability Linkage Line as the state's aging and disability resource centers under federal law. Staff recommends the Senate language be holding on that. Senate Section 5, House Section 5, there's some technical differences, makes modifications to the disability linkage line. Staff recommends the Senate language, but we'll be holding on this section. Senate Section 6, House Section 6, modifies the senior linkage line. There's some differences. The House requires the Board on Aging to consult with entities serving elderly and disabled individuals, requires a senior linkage line to maintain a database searchable down to the neighborhood level, and requires an outreach plan to seniors. So there are differences there. Senate Section 7, House Section 7 are identical. Conforms Medicaid certified nursing facility pre-admission screening activities to federal law by requiring everyone seeking admission to be screened regardless of income, assets, or funding sources, with certain exceptions. Establishes a criteria for process for pre-admission screening, states that the purpose of the screening is to determine if a potential resident meets the nursing facility level of care criteria, and it's effective October 1st, 2013. The money is different, so we'll be holding on this section. Continue on page 4, Senate Section 8, House Section 8 are identical. It lists exemptions to federal nursing facility pre-admission screening requirements and allows the emergency nursing facility admission without screening under certain conditions. And it also requires nursing facilities to provide all admitted people written information on their right to request and receive long-term care consultation services. And again, this section is effective October 1st, 2013. There are money differences, so we'll continue on to Senate Section 9, House Section 9. They're identical. Allows nursing facility admission screening to be conducted by telephone or face-to-face interviews. Requires the senior linkage line to identify and each individual's need for a telephone or face-to-face interview. Again, this section is effective October 1st, 2013, and the money is different. Continuing on the top of page 5. Senate Section 10 and House Section 10 are identical. It requires DHS to provide pre-admission screening funding to the Minnesota Board on Aging. It's effective October 1st, 2013, and the money is different. Senate Section 11, House Section 11, requires the Department of Health to give priority to grantees of community services development grants for older adults if technology is used as part of the proposal. The Department of Transportation must give priority to community services development grantees when distributing transportation-related funds to create options for older adults. There are some differences. It's similar, but there is a difference. The House has language regarding MDH technology grant preferences that are not conflict with the Department of Transportation grant awards. The staff recommends the House language, and otherwise it's funding is the same. So,
Mr. Chair, I move...
Senator Lord.
Article House Section 11 of Article 2.
Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So that Section 11 is adopted. Staff.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate Section 12, House Section 12 are identical. It requires MDH to waive state laws and rules on a time-limited basis if it is determined that the community services development grantees require a waiver in order to achieve the demonstration project goals. And the funding is also identical.
Senator Ori.
I move Senate Section 12.
So Senate Section 12 has been moved. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Section 12 is adopted.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate Section 13, House Section 13 are identical. Requires the Commissioner to give preferences when awarding community services development grants to areas identified home and community-based services needs. The funding is also identical.
Senator Ori.
Mr. Chair, I move Section 13, Senate Section 13.
Section 13 from the Senate side is moved. Is there any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So Section 13, Senate language is adopted.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate Section 14 and House Section 14 are identical. Requires DHS to evaluate projects intended to offer more flexible and updated community support services, improve information and assistance to inform long-term care decisions, and implement nursing facility level of care criteria. The funding is different. Senate Section 15, House Section 15 are identical. Creates a demonstration project upon federal approval to provide navigation, employment supports, and benefits planning services to a targeted group of MA recipients beginning July 1st, 2014. Language is identical, but the funding is different. Continuing on to Senate Section 16, House Section 16, it's identical. Creates a demonstration project upon federal approval to provide service coordination, outreach, in-state tenancy support, and community living assistance to a targeted group of MA recipients beginning July 1st, 2014. Language is identical, but the funding is different. Senate Section 17 and House Section 17 are identical. It's a cross-reference. This is tied to... provisions with different funding. So continuing on the top of page 7, Senate Section 18 and House Section 18 are identical. Modifies the definitions of long-term care consultation services and long-term care options counseling by updating cross-references and making conforming changes. The funding is different. Senate Section 19 and House Section 19 updates the cross-references and modifies the information that must be provided to the person receiving assessment or support planning or the person's legal representative. There are some technical differences, and the staff recommends the Senate language, but the funding is different. Senate Section 20 and House Section 20 modifies the pre-admission screening requirement for individuals from 65 years of age to 60 years of age for nursing facility admission directly to from a hospital, effective October 1st, 2013. They're similar, although the Senate has language specifying the current assessment payment process for individuals under age 65 continue until September 1st, 2013. The funding is different in these provisions. Continuing at the bottom of page 7, Senate Section 21, House Section 21 are identical. Requires the determination of the need for nursing facility, hospital, and ICFDD levels of care to be made according to criteria developed by the commissioner. Specifies the criteria to be used in determining the need for the level of care. Again, they're identical, but the funding is different. Continuing on the top of page 8, Senate Section 22, it aligns with a provision in the House, but it's House Article 7, Section 8, so it's House's continuing care article. It's not contingent, whereas the Senate's is. It eliminates the requirement that nursing facilities pay the county fee for long-term care consultation service beginning October 1st, 2013, and we're going to hold on that, but since this is part of the contingent provisions, SAC does recommend its Senate language in the continuing or in the Article 2. Senate Section 23 and House Section 22 are identical, updates cross references, but funding is different. Senate Section 24 and House Section 23 are identical, also updates a cross reference, but the funding is different. Senate Section 25 and Senate Section 24 are identical. This is establishes essential community supports grants for individuals 65 years of age or older who do not meet the nursing facility level of care criteria but would otherwise qualify for the AC program. The language is identical as well as the funding.
Senator Lurie.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Section 25.
Section 25 has been moved. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So the Senate language on Section 25 is adopted. Mr. Lebeco.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate Section 26, House Section 27 are identical, updating a cross-reference, but the funding is different. Senate Section 27... House Section 28 are also identical. It states the purpose of the SAIL projects is to make strategic changes in the long-term care services and supports for older adults and list the goals of these projects. The language and funding are identical.
Senator Lurie.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Section 27.
Section 27 has been moved. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So Senate language for Section 27 is adopted.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate Section 28 and House Section 29 defines community, core home, and community service-based services provider, elder care development partnership, long-term care services and supports, and older adults. There are some technical differences, and staff recommends the Senate language. And other than that, the language is identical as well as the funding.
Senator Lurie.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Section 28.
Section 28 has been moved. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So Section 28, Senate language is adopted.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate Section 29 and House Section 30 requires the commissioner to select and contract with elder care development partnerships and list the duties of the elder care development partnerships. There are some technical differences. Staff recommends the Senate language. And the funding is also identical.
Mr. Chair.
Lori.
I'd move Section 29, Senate Section 29.
Section 29 has been moved. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Section 29, Senate language is adopted.
Mr. Chair, members, Senate Section 30 and House Section 31 requires DHS to create projects to increase caregiver support and respite care services administered by the nonprofit agency, by nonprofit agencies and chosen through an RFP process. Again, the funding is identical. There's some technical situation differences, and staff recommends the Senate language.
Senator Lori.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Section 30.
Section 30 has been moved. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So Section 30, Senate language is adopted.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate Section 31 and House Section 32 are identical, requires DHS to create projects to provide services and supports to older adults and their informal caregivers administered by HCBS providers and chosen through an RFP process. The language and funding are identical.
Senator Lori.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Section 31.
Section 31 has been moved. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So Section 31 is adopted.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate Section 32 and House Section 33 are identical. Modifies a preference for awarding community services grants to not only areas where nursing facilities have closed, but to areas identified in the Balancing Long-Term Care Services and Supports Report. The language and funding are identical.
Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate Section 32.
Section 32 has been moved. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So Section 32 is adopted.
And Mr. Chair and members, that was the last section of this article in which both the funding and the language are identical. So moving on, Senate Section 33 and House Section 35 are identical. Requires DHS and MDH to develop and implement long-term care quality profiles for all nursing facilities no later than July 1st, 2014. Senate Section 34, House Section 36 are identical, making a technical change. Senate Section 35 and House Section 37 are identical and specifies that consumer surveys of long-term care services are for nursing facility services. Continuing on the top of page 11, Senate Section 36 and House Section 38 involves developing the home and community-based services report card. There are some differences. The Senate requires DHS and MGH to work with existing DHS advisory groups to develop the report cards and provide a report to the legislature by July 1st, 2015, whereas the House language requires the development of the report card without the advisory groups and without a report to the legislature. Continuing on to Senate Section 37 and House Section 39, identical, it modifies requirements related to the dissemination of quality profiles. Senate Section 38 and is identical to another provision of the House in Article 7, Section 22. It modifies the definition of external fixed costs. So again, this is tied to contingency provisions. So if this is to be adopted, I believe we would adopt, you would want to adopt the Senate language in the contingency article and not in the continuing care article. And similar below on Senate Section 39, House Section 23 in Article 7, which modifies the calculation of payment rates for the external fixed costs by removing the cost for long-term care consultations on October 1st, 2013. The very bottom of page 11, Senate Section 40 and House Section 40 are identical and just modifies a cross-reference. As Senate Section 41 and House Section 41, as well as are identical, and it's a cross-reference. Senate Section 42 and House Section 43 is the newly created section in law, Community First Services and Supports. The entire section is effective upon federal approval. There are a fair amount of differences between the two bills. The Senate side had worked with some advocates to change some of the language, and so a lot of the language differences reflect that work. However, as I understand, there's difference in the impact in terms of funding. But as I understand, you will be holding on section as well. And a lot of this goes by subdivision. So Senate Subdivision 1, House Subdivision 1 establishes the Community First Services and Supports Program's basis and scope, replaces the PCA program, contingent upon federal approval. There are some technical differences, and staff recommends the Senate language at the time you adopt it. Subdivision 2, both House and Senate, lists the definitions applicable to the CFSS section. The House and Senate have different definitions of behavior, complex health-related needs, dependency, and then the Senate further defines extended CFSS, and also the Senate creates so the Senate creates a budget model, whereas the House creates a flexible spending model. Both models are similar, and they're an option, an alternative option to the agency provider model, and we'll get into that below. Subdivision 3 in both the House and Senate provides who is eligible and not eligible for CFSS, including people receiving certain MA services, AC recipients, and certain home and community-based services, waiver recipients, among others. The House language has an additional provisions related to eligibility, participation, and disenrollment in the flexible spending model, what the Senate refers to as the budget model. Continuing on to the top of page 13, subdivision 4 in the House and Senate are identical, prohibits selection of CFSS by a participant from restricting access to other medically necessary care and services furnished under the state plan, MA benefit, or other services available through alternative care. Subdivision 5 in the House and Senate establishes the CFSS assessment process. Some technical differences, and additionally, the Senate allows lead agencies to authorize temporary CFSS services. Subdivision 6 in both the House and Senate outlines CFSS delivery plan requirements, including that it be person-centered, and that that DHS establishes the format and criteria of the delivery plan. There are some language differences revolved around the fact that the Senate refers to it as a budget model, whereas the House refers to it as a flexible spending model. Mr. Chair and members, on page 14, subdivision 7 in the House and Senate, a list of services and supports covered under CFSS. The House has a provision stating that covered services must fit within annual budget limits and requires an assessment of behaviors for behavioral observation and redirection services to be covered under CFSS. That was the only change, only difference. Continuing on to page 15, subdivision 8 in the House and Senate requires DHS to create a home care rating methodology for determining the amount of CFSS for each participant. The House requires DHS to develop a home care rating system to determine the amount of CFSS. The Senate language has the home care rating system in it. Senate and House Subdivision 9 lists the goods and services not covered under CFSS. It's similar language. However, the Senate has a provision allowing services for caregivers, for example, training, to be considered a covered service if it can be shown to directly benefit a CFSS participant. Actually, continuing on to down to page 17. Senate and House subdivisions 10 require DHS to develop policies and procedures to ensure provider integrity and financial accountability. and establishes provider qualifications and requirements. The Senate requires the commissioner to develop the policies and procedures to ensure integrity and accountability. The House requires consultation of the Development and Implementation Council to develop the policies and procedures with the report due to the legislature on November 15, 2013. Which are the differences there. And continuing, skipping a page, starting at the top of page 19. Senate and House Subdivision 11 specifies the agency provider model characteristics, including allowing participants a role in selecting and dismissing support workers, the sharing of CFSS services, and requiring agency providers to use 72.5% of the MA-generated revenue towards supporting worker wages and benefits. There are some technical differences, and at the time of adoption, staff recommends the Senate language. Bottom of page 19, Senate and House Subdivisions 12 specifies initial enrollment requirements for CFSS provider agencies. The House requires DHS and the Development and Implementation Council to develop the provider standards and requirements with a report due on November 15, 2013, whereas the Senate language outlines the specific standards and requirements within the language. Continuing on the bottom of page 20, Senate and House Subdivisions 13. Allow participants to exercise more flexibility and control over services and supports. However, this is where the Senate creates the budget model and the House creates the flexible spending model. The big difference, other than the name, is that the Senate outlines the process for participants to disenroll in the budget model, whereas the House states only that participants disenrolled in the flexible spending model must be enrolled in the agency provider model. Senate Subdivision 14, Senate and House Subdivisions 14 lists participants' responsibilities under the budget model or flexible spending model in the House, and the language differences revolve around the different names. Senate and House Subdivisions 15 establishes documentation requirements for all support services provided to CFSS participants in both the agency, provider, and budget or flexible spending models. The House requires DHS and the Development and Implementation Council to develop documentation standards with a report due 15th, 2013, whereas the Senate language actually outlines those specific documentation requirements. Senate and House Subdivisions 16 lists support worker requirements. There's similar language, but again, the House requires DHS and the Development and Implementation Council to establish reasons for denying or terminating a support worker's enrollment, whereas the Senate simply allows the commissioner to deny or terminate provider enrollment. Senate and House Subdivision 17 require DHS to develop qualifications, requirements, and payment rates for support specialists. The language is identical. Senate and House Subdivisions 18 establishes budget allocation parameters for both models. Similar, except for the language differences involved in the two different names of the models in each bill. Senate and House Subdivisions 19 requires DHS to provide the support necessary to ensure CFSS participants are not able to manage their care and budgets, are able to manage their care and budgets if applicable. Language is identical. Continuing on the top of page 23, House and Senate Subdivisions 22 requires participants to be provided with adequate information, counseling, training, and assistance to ensure that participants are able to choose and manage services, models, and budgets. It lists the information that must be provided and requires a commissioner to ensure that the participant has a copy of the most recent service delivery plan. The language is similar. There is some difference involving notification requirements for budget or service reductions or determination or terminations. Towards the bottom of page 23, Senate and House Subdivisions 21 requires the commissioner to establish the Development and Implementation Council. Some differences, the Senate has language requiring the commissioner to consult with the council for at least the first 5 years of CFSS, and requires a report due to the legislature on February 1st, 2014, on ways to recommendations on reducing required paper documentation. Senate and House Subdivisions 23, at the bottom of page 23, Senate and House Subdivisions 22 at the bottom of page 23 requires DHS to establish quality assurance and risk management measures for use in developing and implementing CFSS. The language is similar. However, the Senate has a provision requiring the Development and Implementation Council to be consulted in developing data reporting requirements. Continuing on to page 24, Senate and House Subdivisions 23. Allows DHS immediate access to agency providers or financial management services contractors, documents, and office space during regular business hours without prior notice when investigating possible MA overpayment. The language is identical. Senate and House Subdivisions 24 are also identical. It specifies the background study requirements for CFSS agency providers. And then at the bottom of page 24, regards the effective date of section, we're on section 42, Senate section 42. They're similar, however, the Senate specifies that the services will start 90 days after federal approval or January 1st, 2014, whichever is later, whereas the House simply makes it effective upon federal approval, and the House also has language saying that the Commissioner of Human Services must notify the revisor approval is granted. That's the end of Senate Section 42. Mr. Chair, members, on the top of page 25, Senate Section 43 and House Section 44 are identical, prohibits counties from negotiating GRH supplementary service rates for certain individuals determined to be eligible for housing stability services. Senate Section 44 and House Section 45 are identical and allows the common entry point to accept electronic reports of abuse, neglect, or exploitation submitted through a web-based reporting system established by the commissioner. Senate Section 45 and House Section 46 are identical. It requires the commissioner to establish a statewide common entry point effective July 1st, 2014, whereas current law is each county to designate the common entry point. The bottom of page 25, Senate Section 46 and House Section 47 are identical. It requires the commissioner to conduct an outreach campaign to promote the common entry point for reporting vulnerable adult maltreatment. Top of page 26, Senate Section 47 and House Section 49. It makes the entire article contingent upon federal approval. There are some significant differences. The Senate language simply states that the entire article is effective contingent upon federal approval, whereas the House section outlines the implementation procedures if federal approval comes in, you know, partially or fully or in various stages. You can see that on the right side of the page in the House language. And, in fact, a fair amount of the House language in Subdivision 3 titled Federal Approval is actually in the Senate's contingent appropriations article. So that will have to be figured out in the next few days. So that's the differences in that section. And on the last page, page 27, Senate Section 48 and House Section 48 are identical. It's the repealer. It repeals a provision related to federal grants to establish the common entry point, several subdivisions related to long-term care consultation, and several subdivisions related to the seniors' agenda for independent living. And a lot of that language is replaced by the elder care development partnership language. And that is the end of two, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions from members? obviously we've got a little bit of work to do on this section. So we're going to move on to Article 3.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to begin Article
3. Go ahead.
I'm going to begin Article 3. House Section 1 from Article 10 is a provision that requires legislators to undergo drug and alcohol screening in order to receive their pay. Senate Section.
Mr. Chair, I move that we remove Article Section 1 of Article 3.
We will do that, but I just got to tell you that there was a U.S. senator from, I think it was South Carolina at one time back in the 80s, whose opponent insisted that they take a drug test and have the results made public. And he replied that, the incumbent replied that he would do that if his opponent agreed to take an IQ test and have those results made public. Senator Hayden has moved that Section 1 be... did you move it in favor or just move it?
I move removal.
Okay, it's moved removal of Section 1. Any discussion? Representative Liebling.
Well, Mr. Chair, obviously this was put in sort of tongue-in-cheek, I would say, into our bill, but it was in response to a provision that is in the bill that requires MFIP recipients to be drug tested. And frankly, I don't think we should remove the one without the other. And or if we wanted to leave them both in as a House position, maybe we should have different effective dates so that we start with the legislators, see how that goes, and then maybe move on to the MFIP recipients. I don't know. But I think I would oppose removing that in isolation. I think we should look at those two things as a package. So,
Senator Hayden.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would agree. I mean, in all seriousness, I think that I would like to remove both of them. And if this is not the appropriate time, we could wait. But I do think we have to have a thorough discussion about the stigma that some have put on MFIP recipients. And I think that it is unfair. But maybe there's a more appropriate time to do it. But I do think that we need to remove it.
And just
Senator Lurie.
Mr. Chair, a procedural note. There isn't really a motion to remove something. We had, you know, we started with a blank conference committee report, and we have the House versions and the Senate versions, and what we're doing is motions to put things in.
Oh, okay.
And if a motion to put something in is not made, it never goes in. If a motion is to put something in is made and it doesn't receive three votes on the House side and three votes on the Senate side, it doesn't go in and we're done with it. So, I mean, if somebody wanted to remove something, the proper motion would be to adopt it and then vote it down, and then we'd be done with that section. But just procedurally, that's the manner in which we work here. So we're building a conference committee report, and anything that doesn't get moved doesn't go in. Anything that gets moved and doesn't receive three votes on each side also doesn't go into that conference committee report.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. I appreciate that.
Senator Hayden, withdraws his motion. But I would certainly support him when the time comes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Ace.
To continue, Senate Section 1, it's a Senate-only provision. It allows 20 hours of MFIP child care for child-only cases in which the caregiver is receiving SSI for a disability related to depression or other serious mental illness, and the child is 5 years or younger. Senate Section 2 is a Senate-only provision, which modifies the child care provider choice subdivision by requiring parents or guardians to choose a rated provider for children not yet in kindergarten. Section 3 is a Senate-only provision. It amends the authorization of child care providers. current law requires providers to be authorized before before receiving CCAP. Moving on to page 3, top of the page, section 4 is a Senate-only provision that increases the child care provider rate by 2%. Senate section 5, House section 4, modify the child care assistance statute limiting the number of days a provider can be reimbursed for child absent days. Both the House and the Senate versions increase the absent day limit from 10 to 25 days. The House allows an exemption from the 25-day limit for some documented medical conditions and defines absent day limit. The Senate does not. Senate Section 6, House Section 7 is a section on temporary immediate suspension expedited hearings. It allows the Commissioner of Human Services to determine whether there's reasonable cause to order a temporary immediate suspension of a child care license based on a violation of safe sleep requirements. This section and following sections are related to the child mortality review that was done at the request of the Child Care Licensing Division at DHS based on the child mortality.
This is Senator Lori.
Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate Section 6.
Senator Lori moves Senate Section 6. Any discussion? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So Senate Section 6 is adopted. And Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to move the same thing. And in light of this is such an important section, and because obviously we just had another death in child care, and now we know that it was again related to this issue of placing children to sleep in the wrong position, and I just appreciate that Senator Lori moved that section. I was going to do the same.
Thank you. Ms. Aves.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate Section 7, House Section 8 requires a note from an infant's physician in order for the child to be placed to sleep on its stomach or in an alternate sleep arrangement. This is the safe sleep language that traveled in some separate bills, but it's also carried in this bill. The House and Senate provisions are identical, except the House includes a definition of a pacifier.
Mr.
Senator,
Chair, I'd like to move the Senate version 7. The definition of pacifier got a little dicey in committee. We removed it, and DHS didn't seem to have any problem with removing that definition. Probably saved me a lot of time on the Senate floor if we didn't come back with it.
I don't know about that, Mr. Chair.
Okay, well.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just because, appreciate that, Senator Lori, and just because this is such a key issue, I just would like to understand a little bit more what that, we didn't have any discussion, I don't think, about that definition. And so I'd just like to understand just a bit more what that brings up or doesn't bring up.
All right, let me find the definition of a pacifier.
Uh-oh. 1 hour and slobber.
I grew up, all we had was a thumb.
All right, well. I know, what is a pacifier? Let's see. Section 7. I'm looking for it. If somebody else finds it, maybe they could tell me. House Section 8. Here it is. Okay. Unexpected.
Senator Lori.
Yeah.
It's on page R7. House language beginning on line 346.7.
Point what?
7.
Okay. Yeah, for the purposes of this section, a pacifier is defined as a synthetic nipple designed for infant sucking with nothing attached to it. I think we all know what a pacifier is, and DHS did seem to agree that everybody kind of does know what a pacifier is. I mean, the bottom line is you can't, you know, for safe sleep, it's the baby and a pacifier. The sheets have to be tucked in nicely. There can't be a lot of loose things. It just seemed like overly prescriptive. And, I mean, we spent a lot of time on this.
A lot of time.
Over and over and over again, everywhere we went. And I think that the definition of a pacifier really is, you know, superfluous. I didn't pronounce that right, but I'd move Senate Section 7.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't want to have this become too big of a thing, Senator Lurie. I feel your pain here. You know, we don't want a section about legislator pacifiers. but maybe we need that. I don't know. But the thing that strikes me about this definition, and again, I have to say we didn't discuss this in the House that I recall, but I think the key issue here might be nothing attached to it, because people sometimes attach pacifiers to strings and things like that, and you would not want that in the crib. So I don't know if that was sort of the issue here. That's the part of it that strikes me as somewhat important. So maybe, members, maybe here's a suggestion. Maybe we could come up with some. Oh, I know this is going to be an issue for you.
Because we have somebody from DHS that could like to comment. Welcome to the conference.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Karen Mickelson. I'm from the Department of Human Services. The reason we put the definition of pacifier in there was because if you look up definitions in all the different dictionaries, a lot of them say a blanket is a pacifier, a person is a pacifier, a snuggly, wuggly animal is a pacifier. And we wanted to make sure that people didn't say, well, this is the baby's pacifier, that it strictly meant, you know, what a standard pacifier is with the plastic, synthetic rubber nipple that's in the mouth. And I guess now they have some with animals attached to them or all different stuff, and we didn't want anything attached to the nipples. So that's the pacifier. So that's why we put that in. But we do have an amendment that didn't get to you yet, and I don't know if it's in my bag somewhere. And that we decided that maybe it would be helpful to tie it into the federal regs on what they define a pacifier as. So we were hoping to add that. If we can accept it, we can add that in a minute.
What, Ms. White?
Mr. Chair and Senator, this might fix. It would. This would not be a blanket or a person or whatever else can be a pacifier. But on 3.346.7, if we just put the infant's synthetic pacifier, then delete the definition of pacifier, and then that would, I think, alleviate DHS's problems with that term, which is more expansive than they want.
Mr. Chair, you know, I don't know if it quite gets to everything. I mean, you mentioned the issue of the attached pacifier. Maybe I mischaracterized. I thought that DHS was okay with eliminating the definition. If there's another amendment that we should consider, you know, I guess this issue just is going to plague me until May 20th, and it's fine. It's really, you know, safe sleep is incredibly important, and I really don't mean to make light of it. So I think that I will withdraw my motion and suggest that we hold on this and press on.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just to
Representative Loeffler.
Liebling. Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought someone was confusing us again.
Well, Mr. Chair, it seems like the key concern is for the child not to be smothered or strangled. And maybe in light of that, we could have language that just says nothing can be placed in the crib that would be conducive to either of those two. And I think a standard pacifier that doesn't have anything attached to it would not meet either of those two criteria. I mean, maybe we can take a different strategy. But we'll let the experts maybe ponder this more.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. And I like Representative Loeffler's suggestion that we don't have to do this now. We obviously can't do it right now, and we certainly don't want to go to special session over the issue of pacifiers.
Yeah, I said, Mr. Chair, it'll plague me till May 20th. I don't think we're going to go to special session with it.
Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I hate to bring this up, but that section also talks about swaddling, and we spend over 45 minutes just talking about that, and we don't have that in our language for a reason, so don't want to discuss it now if we need to put it aside, but just bringing it up that was also a point of contention.
Mm-hmm. Swaddling, what I think was in the House. One of the committees. So anyway, Section 7 has been put on hold.
Placement with his kids and all that stuff.
All right, Ms. Hayes.
Mr. Chair and members, on page 4, Senate Section 8, House Section 9, changes the term sudden infant death syndrome to sudden unexpected infant death, and the term shaken baby syndrome to abusive head trauma. This is identical in both the House and Senate.
Mr. Chair, let me try moving Senate Section 8.
Can you post that in your policy committee?
Any discussion of Section 8? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So Senate Section 8 is adopted.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate Section 9, House Section 10, are exactly the same as the preceding sections, makes the same changes in terminology.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Section 9.
Section 9 has been moved. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So Senate Section 9 is adopted. Ms. Aves.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate Section 10, House Section 11, are identical. They both provide guidelines for disinfecting a diaper changing area in a family child care for a family child care provider.
Senator Ori.
You know, Mr. Chair, I see that these are identical, but I'm just thinking back, and I have had people raise issues with this one. I'd like to hold and allow them the opportunity to talk with some of us. There's apparently some issue with the chemical.
Section 10 will be, and Senate Section 10, House Section 11 will be put on hold. Ms. Aves.
Mr. Chair and members, on the top of page 5, Senate Section 11, House Section 12, is family child care infant sleep supervision requirements. It encourages license holders to monitor sleeping infants in person every 30 minutes. For infants in their first 4 months of care and infants who have a URI, the license holder is encouraged to make these checks every 15 minutes, and it also encourages license holders to use and maintain audio or visual monitoring devices to monitor each sleeping infant. They're identical.
Senator Ory.
Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate Section 11.
Section 11 has been moved. Any discussion? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. These provisions, I know in the House, were vetted in Representative Mullery's committee, and I'm just not sure, as I sit here today, what the result of that was. And I think before adopting this, I'd like to know if that passed through his committee.
Ms. Hayes.
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, yes, it did.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hayden.
I do remember that there was some conversation, at least from the department, about subsection 2, the use of audio or visual monitoring devices. And what I remembered about it was that if it was useful, frankly, if it was necessary to have that, I remember some testimony saying and I just can't remember if it was from the department saying that an audio device wasn't particularly helpful in a child's room because it didn't do, it kind of gave an over-reliance on the provider to use that as something to monitor the child's sleep, and they didn't know if it was effective or not. So I'm just kind of summoning that.
If there's somebody from the department who would like to comment on that.
It was a long day.
Welcome back, Mrs. Mickelson.
Hi, I'm Karen Mickelson from DHS. I do recall something being said about that, but I don't think it came from the department. I think some of the providers had concerns about that. The department was advocating for required use of the both the 15-minute and 30-minute checks and the use of the audio equipment. But after a lot of negotiations with providers, we agreed to have that recommended language. But I know some providers felt that the monitoring wasn't necessary. But that was not the department position.
Well, Ms. Chair, it does say encourage. I just worry a little bit about, having our providers do things that aren't very useful. But it does. I do read the language again, and it says encourage. I guess as long as it's not mandated, I think that is kind of where I was going, because I'm not sure that a lot of our providers feel like that is something that they would use in order to maybe for older children and others in terms of making sure that they can hear when children get up. But with infants, I can remember testimony saying that it wasn't very useful and that the actual sleep checks was the most useful practice that they had.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm looking at the summary. It says the sections are identical, but it says under the Senate language, the license holder must also use, whereas it says under the House language that it's encourages. And I'm not finding the language right away here quickly to see if the actual language is different, but I think we need to clear that up.
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, the statutory language is identical.
And Mr. Chair, and it says encourage.
Representative Liebling.
Yeah.
Does. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it says encourage.
Okay. Any further discussion? Thank you, Ms. Mickelson. Go ahead.
I renew my motion to adopt Senate Section 11.
Okay. We've discussed it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So Section 11 Senate language is adopted. Ms. Hayes.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate Section 12, House Section 13 is related to child care license holder insurance. Both sections are identical. They require license holders to provide written notice to parents whether the license holder has liability insurance. It also sets out the requirements for notification when the liability insurance will expire, what the license holder has to do if they do not have liability insurance, and requires access to the liability insurance certificate for both the commissioner and the recipients of the services.
Senator Lurie.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'd like to get clarification on this side-by-side summary. The Senate side says that it adds a new section of law requiring license holders to maintain insurance coverage, and I don't think that's quite right. I think it requires notification to parents, doesn't it? If these are...
Ms. Hayes.
Mr. Chair and members, the language is identical, and yes, it does... if the license holder has insurance, they must do certain things. If the license holder does not have insurance, there's some set of guidelines. So you're correct. The Senate summary does not adequately describe the section. It does allow for license holders to go without insurance if certain measures are taken to apprise the parents.
Okay. So with that, I'd move House Section 13.
Senator O'Leary moves House Section 13. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So House Section 13 is adopted. Ms. Hayes.
Mr. Chair and members, on page 6, Senate Section 13, House Section 14 are identical. Again, this is a section that changes the terminology of sudden infant death syndrome to sudden unexpected infant death and shaken baby syndrome to abusive head trauma.
Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate Section 13.
Any discussion of Section 13? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So Section 13 is adopted. Ms. Saves.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate Section 14, House Section 15 are identical except for the formatting, and the staff recommends the House language and formatting. What this section does is modify family child care training requirements to include training on behavior guidance, to require first aid training be repeated every 2 years, require that CPR training include techniques for infants and children, specifies what CPR training meets the requirements. It requires abusive head trauma training to occur at least once every year instead of once every 5 years. Subdivision 7 increases training hours from 8 to 16 annually. Subdivision 9, which is a new subdivision, requires at least 6 hours of approved training on supervising for safety prior to initial treatment and before caring for children, and at least 2 hours annually thereafter. Subdivision 10 requires county licensing staff to accept training approved by the Minnesota Center for Professional Development. And House Subdivision 11 requires the commissioner to establish statewide accessible training before imposing these new training requirements on the providers.
Mr. Chair, we have had a couple of folks that wanted to talk about some issues in this one, so we'll hold on this one.
We're going to hold on this one. This is one of the more important parts of this, yeah, this article. Ms. Hayes.
Mr. Chair and members, the next section on page 8 is Senate-only section 15. It modifies the parent contribution for TEFRA services. The next section, section 16, is a Senate-only provision that requires current foster care rates to remain in effect until December 13, 2015. And the final section that I am going to discuss with you is House Section 17. It establishes the Cultural and Ethnic Communities Leadership Council. This is also Senate or Representative Moran has a separate bill that establishes this. The language is also in House File 975, which has passed the floor, and Senate File 872, which has had its second reading on the second floor, on the Senate floor. The bill that it's traveling in is the DHS Fair Hearings bill. I do not know what the final status of that bill is going to be.
We will hold on that one for a while. Who's next?
Mr. Chair, on page 9 is a House-only provision, section 18, which prohibits individuals who have who've been convicted of first or second degree murder or first degree criminal sexual account from receiving general assistance. House-only section 19 amends group residential housing to allow 35 beds to be designated for youth victims of sex trafficking. And I think the House has a technical amendment to this section.
Mr. Chair,
Senator,
I have the A216 amendment. Always makes me nervous when I see a number that high on the amendments. Somebody's got to be up to something somewhere, but I do have the A216 amendment. I will offer that to the House language. So I'm not proposing that we adopt the House language at this time. I'm proposing that we get the House language in shape for future consideration for inclusion in the conference committee report.
Okay, so any discussion of the A216 amendment to the House language?
You don't have it yet, Mr. Chair.
No, oh, okay. Senator Lurie, would you like to describe this amendment?
Well, it's been, Mr. Chair, described to me as a technical amendment to amend the House language providing for the GRH beds for the sexually exploited youth. The Senate appropriates money for this, for housing for this population, but if we're going to bring the two in line, this is a technical amendment that was recommended by DHS. Okay, and so it'll just put the House language in shape to better match up with the Senate's money if we finally get around to adopting that money.
And Senator Lurie, are you looking at having these a separate facility?
I'm not sure about
just for young women or girls that have been sexually exploited, or are you going to put them in with some other group of people?
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that this would be funding to provide housing specifically for sexually exploited youth, a mixed facility.
Good. That's important to me, because I think that they need their own special place. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I agree that this is an important issue. But as I look at the amendment that has been suggested by DHS, there is some key differences in that it is suggested that we eliminate the language that says the transfer of available beds from one county to another can only occur with the agreement of both counties, and instead substitutes language that would direct the commissioner to manage and authorize the distribution and development of all beds with rates in excess of the MSA equivalent rate. And it feels like there's a change in relationship here that maybe I need to better understand in terms of who's making decisions and being involved in location decisions and those sorts of things. I don't have a problem with the department having some responsibility to make sure that they have some budget control. But there are other issues that come up with these kinds of facilities, and I just think there's a question about the suggested language.
Here she comes.
We have someone from DHS to comment. Hope. Somebody else walking. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, my name is Ralph McWhorter with the Minnesota Department of Human Services, and I'm going to take a quick look at this language just to make sure I see it. Mr. Chair, if I understand, I'd have to have the language in front of me to make sure. I believe this language would be inserted to the point so that we could actually determine how to provide the designated beds that would be provided for the sex traffic youth. At this point, the department doesn't collect that information. The counties each have that information on the beds that are available, the bank beds. So for us to manage the beds that are being created for sex traffic youth, we would need to know when those beds are available and be able to hold them for those individuals. So we're asking that we be provided the information from the counties. Otherwise, you might be creating new beds with the proposal.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. But this proposed language changes the underlying statute that applies to all MSA-related housing. And so it goes much broader than just addressing these particular 35 beds. And I think there needs to be some further work to figure out what that relationship is between the counties and DHS and this form of housing for all populations. And if you have some particular concerns about managing these 35 beds or knowing when we've hit 35, I understand that. But I think this language goes farther than the intent you just described.
Mr. Chair.
Senator DeLory.
You know, I understand your point, Representative Loeffler, and I think I would at this point withdraw the A216 amendment. I think that I'm glad that it's out there so that we can have a discussion about it, but it was framed to me as a technical amendment that I was happy to offer. So now we can kick it around a little bit and probably just move on and keep this here unless DHS has, you know, more insight into how it would be characterized as a technical, because I think you make a good point. It looks like the language that we're striking allows the counties themselves to allocate these beds, and we're really transferring that authority over to DHS, and it reads to me as something significantly more than technical in that regard.
And, Mr. Chair, that wasn't our intent is to be make sure that we can track those 35 bids.
Okay.
So we're very open to working on trying to figure that out a little bit better.
So we'll withdraw the A216 amendment and try to get some clarity around that and make it more technical and less substantive.
Okay. So we're going to put a hold on section 19.
Yeah. Oh, section 19.
And Ms. White.
On to page 10, Senate only section 17 modifies the definition of disregard in the MFIP program, which provides that the disregard for ongoing eligibility is 50% of the gross earned income. Section 21 is a House only provision, and it requires MFIP applicants and recipients to undergo drug and alcohol screening and provide evidence of a negative screening in order to be eligible for benefits. Senate-only Section 8.
Just hang on. Focus out of here. Right now.
Sure. I'll move House Section 21.
Okay, House Section 21 has been moved. Need discussion. Senator. Former representative.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I would oppose. I'm trying to get the play here. So I would oppose moving Section 21. I think that we had a little discussion before, and I think it is unnecessary and unconstitutional and cost a lot of money and also, I think, really kind of cast dispersion on those who are on this program.
Well, it's been moved, and I can tell you I intend to vote no.
Right.
We might go back and go to the first article. So, any further discussion? All those in favor of Section 21 signify by saying aye. All those opposed?
No.
No.
So Section 21 is not adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Article 10, Section 1, pertaining to drug testing of legislators.
Okay, any discussion of that one? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
No.
So Section 1 is not adopted.
No,
roll call. Just kidding. So, Ms. White.
Mr. Chair, on to Senate only Section 18. It modifies the MFIP initial income test, requiring the applicant to be below the family wage level instead of the transitional standard in order to be eligible for MFIP. Senate only Section 19 strikes a reference to the MFIP family cap, which is repealed later in this article.
We didn't talk about this.
No, we didn't.
Senator Lurie.
Mr. Chair, can I ask counsel to help us understand if this one's ready to be adopted? This is I read this as a technical amendment that the House does repeal somewhere else as well, and I think we probably could adopt this, but I'm not certain. Is that... I'm getting nods.
Mr. Chair and members, both the House and Senate repeal the family cap. It's a money issue. If you do repeal that, this you're absolutely right. It's a technical. It just deletes a reference to that family cap.
Okay, so Senator Lurie is
moving. Senate Section 19.
Move Sections 19. Any discussion? All those in favor, signify. Representative Leibwin.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I know it's there's broad support for appealing the family cap, but since this is a money provision, I'm just wondering if we want to right now strike the reference to it when we haven't really adopted. I just wonder if we're proceeding a little bit backwards when we don't know our target yet, and we haven't. We are adopting a money provision here by striking this reference. I just wonder if it wouldn't be better just to wait and kind of do that cleanly all at once.
Okay. We can.
Okay.
I'll withdraw my amendment. I mean, my not amendment, but motion.
Motion. So Section 19 will be put on hold.
May I ask? Sure. I'm sorry if I sort of lapsed for a minute, but on Section 18 on the House side, did anybody describe that more thoroughly? Or would someone describe more thoroughly what that's about, which is prohibiting individuals who have been convicted of first or second degree murder general assistance? What's the issue, or what's that about?
Representative Leibwin.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Sharon. That was a floor amendment in the House, and I was not a proponent of it, so I can't really give you the rationale for it. I can just tell you that, you know, obviously it went on the bill, so I don't know if you want to consider that further, we might need some testimony from DHS or something to explain the impact of that. I don't know if there really is any or not, or but what it would be, Sharon. I should say.
Thank you. I just think you have to be very careful. I don't know what this is trying to get at, other than being angry about people having been criminals, and then you lead people after if they're for some reason are without any resources, mm-hmm. leaving them in a very vulnerable position to be a reoffending mm-hmm. person. So I just thought maybe there was some reasonable mm-hmm. rationale for this, and if there's not, then not have the language added, as you're saying. So.
Any further discussion? Does anybody want to make a motion on that? Or does anybody from the department have? I mean, I would be concerned that this might increase the budget in the corrections department.
Do they bill their MA services in corrections? For MA for healthcare services mm-hmm. in the
we just changed that stuff around.
Okay. Okay. So we're just leave this on hold. Ms. White.
On to page 11, Mr. Chair, Senate only Section 20 increases the MFIP transitional standard by 16% effective October 1st of 2015. Senate only Section 21 modifies the initial income test for MFIP eligibility by using the family wage level instead of the transitional standard, which is consistent with Senate only Section 18.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Loeffler.
On the Senate-only provisions, and we can do this later when we're discussing them in more detail, but since they were only Senate-only, it would really be useful for us House members to have a better understanding of the impacts of some of them. And it doesn't have to happen now as we're kind of trying to adopt same and similar, but at some point a better understanding of impacts might be helpful.
Ms. White.
Mr. Chair, House-only provision Section 22 requires the county agency to cooperate with law enforcement to determine if an applicant is a fleeing felon. House-only Section 23 prohibits individuals who have been convicted of first or second degree murder or first degree criminal sexual conduct from receiving MFIP. House only section 24 allows MFIP assistance units with housing costs that exceed 50% of their monthly cash grant to receive a housing assistance grant up to $250 per month. Senate only section 22.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hayden.
And I don't know if we are going to go over this later, but I think that that's a pretty significant change, and I'd like to kind of have more discussion about that. And once again, I don't know when the appropriate time, but on House Section 24.
And there's a fairly large fiscal.
Okay.
With that one. So why don't we put that on hold?
That's $10 million a year.
That's right.
Senate only Section 22 suspends the work participation cash benefits program but allows the commissioner to reinstate that program if the state does not meet federal TANF work participation requirements. On to page 12.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abor.
Yeah, sorry, I'm late.
Welcome.
Yeah, thanks. It's snowing outside.
That's right.
Is that a savings? This section, there must be a savings to that, right?
Staff, yeah, section 22.
Yeah, there was a savings, I think.
All right.
Mr. Chair, I'm pretty sure this was part of the governor's rebuilding an MFIP, I think he called it, and I think that there was a line item savings attached to this, and it, it looks like we can probably meet our work participation requirements without this, and that's what it was kind of designed to do, make sure that, you know, we got people in the numerator and the denominator by keeping them on the roll somewhere in order to make sure that we met our work participation rate historically, and it appears that we can do that at this point moving forward as the economy's been improving without this additional workload on the department. I don't think it was a significant savings, but that's my recollection of the discussion of it, and so we're able to suspend this. I think it was $25 a month, yeah, or something for a family, and some additional work on behalf of the department. And so by suspending this, there's a modest savings, but it's part of the governor's broader MFIP proposal.
All right. And Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
Just a comment about just the general idea about savings items in any of the three bills. Just having sat through a worse version of this 2 years ago, there's some things that save money that people don't like all that well. They become more at risk of being implemented the closer we get to our target at the end. And so just as people notice, some of these items, there's some the House didn't, like the 340B, you know, that saves money, but it's problematic. But if you're within 300,000 of your target, there's a temptation to take some ideas that you might not like as well. So just to remind the audience to be ever vigilant and remind us about what really isn't a good idea. So thank you. And that's new. I have no opinion on this thing, so thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ms. White.
On to page 12. Senate only section 23 modifies the TANF performance-based funds by providing that a county that performs within or above its expected performance on the self-support index receives an allocation of 5%. Senate section 24 allows the commissioner to pursue TANF demonstration projects or waivers of TANF requirements to develop a more results-oriented MFIP program, Senate-only provision. Senate section 25 and House section 25 modify the Homeless Youth Act. Senate subdivision 1 establishes a grant program for providers who are committed to serving homeless youth to reduce the incidence of homelessness. House Subdivision 1 states the mission statement of the program, which is to reduce the incidence of homelessness among youth. It requires the commissioner to establish a Homeless Youth Act fund. House repeals Subdivision 2, which is a report, and the Senate modifies that report by requiring details about the grants made, the distribution of the funds throughout the state, and other information to the legislature on a biennial basis. The House strikes the term prostitution and inserts sexual exploitation in Subdivisions 3 and 5. And Subdivision 4 is identical. And Subdivision 6 related to funding. The House requires funded programs to submit certain data to the commissioner, and requires the commissioner to submit a report to the legislature. So there's some differences. They're not.
I think both sides are good, but we're going to have to meld them, so I would keep that on hold.
Senate only, section 26, on to page 13, modifies the Vulnerable Children and Adults Act formula by retaining the 2013 formula for future years and precluding the commissioner from changing the formula or recommending a change to the legislature without public review and input. House only, section 26, clarifies that an ombudsperson is to act independently but in collaboration with the community-specific board that appointed the ombudsperson. Senate only, sections 27 and 28, make the relative custody assistance and adoption assistance forecasted programs. Senate only, section 29, allows child care reimbursements under the adoption assistance program if the caregiver is unemployed due to a disability.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
Can you go back to that forecasted versus appropriated change about the adoption assistance? And does that have a, that must have a cost, but was that a policy discussion you had in the Senate about how that was inadequate or something, or that would make more sense to forecast that?
This way.
Mr. Chair and members, this was the Senate's response to the governor's proposal for the North Star for children. And there's a handful of provisions in here that relate to a plan for permanency. This is one thing that the Senate decided to do. It's my understanding that with the forecasted programs, then the increase in the and this can probably explain the increase in the caseload would automatically be in the forecast and paid for rather than having to appropriate money.
Representative Abler.
Well, the only thing, I mean, I can see the merit of that. One of the benefits that we would stop feeding the school shift quite so vigorously as a committee here. At least we keep the money in our own pot. But I'm curious if you decide to do that, if it comes to be a serious discussion, what the impact is, just so we know what we're choosing.
It's my understanding, Representative Abler, that in this biennium it did not have a fiscal impact.
Mr. Albrecht.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, we have not heard from the department that this provision would carry a cost in this biennium.
Right. Mr. Chair.
I should say in the 2014-15 biennium.
Right. And that would, but I would expect a tail impact. I would think if you're adding more money, it has to be showing up somewhere. So,
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, I guess it would depend on whatever assumptions there are about the growth of the caseload. And
So, Mr. Chair, so is this not covered, carried in the spreadsheet as a cost in the tails end? Or is that one of the open items in your spreadsheet still?
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, there is a cost on the spreadsheet for the Senate's changes to the adoption assistance program. I would assume that those costs reflect the anticipated change in the caseload as well.
All right, fine.
Okay. Mr. McCorder.
There's some offset.
Nothing's free.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ralph McCorder with the Minnesota Department of Human Services. And correct, the governor's budget proposal and adopted what I'm tracking in the House and Senate positions are the savings to the current caseload reductions, actually, in the adoption assistance program. Those are carried out under normal rules in a non-forecasted program. Those are flatlined out in the out years. So right now we've just done a basic caseload for this current biennium, and that's flatlined in normal budget rules from non-forecasted programs. So in another biennium, another forecast cycle, we would go through the November-February forecasting process like other forecasted programs, and that's how this language would affect that.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
Well, thanks. And Mr. McCorder, so if this program went from appropriated to forecasted, is it likely to be a tail cost increase? Or are we just, is it just a technical change that's without any impact?
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, currently we're forecasting, in a quote, forecasting a reduction to the program, and to the extent that other proposals would impact number of children going into foster care and the number of children moving into adoption assistance, that would affect whether there'd be tails increasing or not.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Very interesting.
Ms. White.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate Section 30 and House Section 27 provides that a child up to age 18 who is engaged in conduct that violates laws related to prostitution is not considered a delinquent child. This is part of the Safe Harbor Bill.
The language is identical.
Yes.
Since Senator Laurie is not here, would a senator like to move this section?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Section 30.
Senate 30.
And I guess House Section 27.
Okay, Senator Hayden moves Section 30 of the Senate language. And is there any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So Section 30 is adopted.
Senate Section 31 and House Section 28 are identical. This is also from the Safe Harbor Bill and exempts from the definition of juvenile petty officer a juvenile charged with a misdemeanor level prostitution offense when acting as a patron.
Senator Hayden.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Senate Section 31.
Any discussion? All those in favor of Section 31 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So we've adopted Section 31.
Senate Section 32 and House Section 29 are identical, again from the Safe Harbor Bill. It amends the definition of child in need of protection or services by striking a reference to juveniles engaged in prostitution.
Senator Hayden.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Senate Section 32.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So we've adopted Section 32. Ms. White.
Senate Section 33 and House Section 30 is also from the Safe Harbor Bill. It's identical language, and it corrects an oversight in the definition of sexually exploited youth.
Mr. Chair, I'd like
Mr.
to
Hayden.
Move.
Senator Hayden.
I'd like to move Senate Section 33.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So we've adopted Section 33, and I will say that these are very important sections. Ms. White.
Mr. Chair, Senate Section 34 and House File 1470, which passed the floor, relate to child support, and it allows the child support services to be discontinued for a case with arrears under certain circumstances. And the language is different. The House formats one new paragraph. There's grammatical differences. The House requires notice by certified mail, and the Senate requires the public authority to mail a second notice to the obligee that the case has been closed.
And we're going to hold on that one. Ms. White.
Senate Section 35 and House Section 31 relate to the EBT transaction costs. The Senate discontinues the EBT subsidy when the federal government discontinues the federal subsidy, and the House prohibits the commissioner from continuing the subsidy to retailers.
Yep. Okay. We're going to hold on that one as well. Ms. White.
The rule guys don't like it.
Section 32 is a house-only provision, and it changes the effective date of a provision passed in 2011, which limited child care assistance payments when a child in care is related to the employee of the provider or to the provider. And it changes the effective date from January 1st of 2013. Let me see what you do here. Changes the effective date of this section from January 1st, 2013 to July 1st, 2014. It makes the section retroactively effective January 1st, 2013.
We're going to have to hold on that one as well.
Somali.
And swipe.
Senate Section 36 and House Section 33 relates to the Citizens League pilot project, which excludes conditional cash transfers from the determination of income of eligibility for public programs. The language is very similar, except the Senate includes a report in new paragraph E instructing the Citizens League to submit the report to the legislature on the outcomes of the demonstration project. And then there's a technical difference, and the staff recommends the Senate language on the technical difference. And then the other difference is the report in the Senate language.
Is there anybody here from the audience who'd like to comment on this one?
I don't remember.
Mr. Chair, I did hear from Ron Elwood this morning, who brought this legislation forward, and he indicated that he does prefer the Senate language.
Ron Elwood and Elwood.
Somebody in the Senate want to move that?
This is good. Why don't you move it?
I'll move Senate Section 36, language in the Senate side, and Section 36.
Okay, Section 36, Senate language has been moved. Is there any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So Section 36, Senate language is adopted, and Ms. White.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate Section 37, a Senate-only provision. This is part of the plan for permanency on the Senate side. Requires the commissioner to analyze benefits and services available to children in foster care, relative custody assistance, and adoption assistance to establish a uniform set of benefits. And a report is due January 15, 2014. Senate-only Section 38 relates back to Senate-only Section 2, and it requires the commissioner to develop a waiver process for purposes of a child care provision in Senate Section 2. House-only Section 36 requires the Minnesota Interagency Council on Homelessness to recommend strategies to reduce the number of youth experiencing or at risk of homelessness. Requires the council to provide an update to the legislature by December 1st, 2014. And Senate Section 39 and House Section 37 are the repealers. Both the House and Senate repeal the family cap and a criminal statute. And the House also repeals the homeless and runaway youth report, which the Senate modifies.
I think we'd be ready to adopt part of this, but since Senator Lori is not here, I think we can just hold off on that. And besides that, the House is supposed to be in session right now. So we have finished Article 3, so thank you. And we're going into recess until 6 o'clock this evening, and we're going to be in room 123, I believe. So we're in recess.